the following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
So there I was in a bar, and I was eating shrimp, because that's what I do. The man next to me whispered in a hushed sort of way, which is what whispering is, and he said, "Hey, hey, can I buy you a beverage to replenish your precious body?" Bodily fluids. I said, "Sure, sure." And almost instantly a glass of whiskey appeared before me. I kept eating shrimp, because that's what I do. And he said, "I've got a lot of pow." And I said, "Yeah, yeah, I've got a lot of shrimp. The Frank is on right now."
The Hallelujah.
This time, girl. Not this time. No! No, 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 no! No! No, 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 no! No! Not this fucking time! No fucking way! No fucking way! No fucking way! No! No, 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 no! No, 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 no! Not this time, girl. Not this time. No, 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 no.
Airplanes. You know anything about jets?
No, but it sounds expensive.
Oh, it will be, but we gotta get started. Come on, walk with me. Whoever can start utilizing jet technology on commercial airliners is gonna win all the marbles, you understand? Odie, what do you know about science?
I know a little. I can work something to show you.
Basic turbine stuff.
No. One of those fellas. They work for me.
Everybody works for you, Howard.
Lockheed worked on the F-80, so let's get Bob Gross on the phone and see if he can help us out.
Okay. What? Now?
Of course now. And we've got to get into it. Jets are going to be the way of the future.
It's 4:30.
Well, I talked to Bob last week. He's in New York, so 7:30.
He won't be in the office.
Oh, we're going to have to figure out what hotel he's at. The question is, do you want to... telephone call, you want some kind of meeting, right?
No, you want a meeting, don't we, Howard?
All right, well, you want me to bring him out here tomorrow then, Howard?
The future. The future.
Howard?
Howard.
The future. The future.
Let's take a walk, Howard.
The way of the future.
No, give me a hand here, will you, Glenn?
The way of the future. 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 The way of the future.
Stay here. I'll be right back. You understand, Howard?
The way of the future. The way of the future.
Guard the door. I'll get a doctor. No one sees him like this.
The way of the future. The future. The way of 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 the future.
The richest man in the world.
Not safe.
The way of the future. 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 The way of the future.
Okay, here we go.
The way of the future. The way of the future.
Stay here. Listening to Frank Capola.
Hey, 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 hey.
Bart Broadcasting. Bart Broadcasting. It's the way of the future. It's the way of the future. The Bart Broadcasting. Bart Broadcasting. Yes, of course. I am the future. Where are we? Oh, we're here. My name is Frank Tom, and I'm joined to tell you the show. Netarate, couple surfers, netaholics, and infomaniacs. We're going down a rabbit hole. Tonight, today, Y2K plus 30. Oh, no, plus 14 on the 30th. I'm going to get myself together. Stay with us here. From Ice Cap to Ice Cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello, and into every bordello. It is a good thing I am ambidextrous. Not just ambidextrous. What would it be? It's a good thing I have... Here, you hear? Beep, boop, 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 man. And everybody calls. Because it's the time to go on the air. So why shouldn't everyone get in touch with me at that particular time? It's a good time. They know where I'm located at that particular moment. My name is Frank Atola. My name is Don Title the Show. And we're just trying to get along here as well as we can on this end of October of Y2K plus 14. A lot of talk and a lot of fun and a lot of fascinating things going to go on, because Dr. Andrew Wolodar is back with us, and Tom Savino will be here, and anyone else who walks in at any given time can be allowed. I don't want to say that, though, because we're not invited. If you know where the place is, please be invited. Don't just walk in here. What do you think this is, the Howdy Doody show? What do you think? That was all of a sudden. I got a million things to do. I have no staff whatsoever. And everybody wants attention. Well, that's why I'm here. I'm here on Cthulhu Chronicles. I want to mention to all the people who are listening live here at SRM Media Works. If you're listening live, if you're not listening live, if you're listening on one of the great many stations performing the rebroadcast of this show, then hello to you. But right now, remember that next Tuesday is the 4th of November, into November, and I'll be on the Joel McCulloch election night special. And listening to me during election night is always a treat. And it's the midterm elections here in the United States of America, and I have a whole different spin. Thank you, Joel. I was on last week, and I'll be on, and he invited me to the election show, because that's the stuff they talk about. We don't. We're going to talk about rabbit holes and time travel and all the stuff that is not on the George Norrie show, because on George Norrie and that overnight thing there, those are just the wackos with the 20,000-page books about stuff that never sells, because nobody buys that stuff anymore. We are living in the digital area, in the Hallelujah Trail. We're on the Hallelujah Trail. We're right here. Yeah, that's right. We're right here on the Hallelujah Trail. Thank you for that. And we're going to get Mr. Tom Savino on, then we're going to get Mr. Wolodar on. I don't really have a doctor. I shouldn't say mister. I have respect for people who earn titles. Everyone knows that. What are we going to do? We're going to talk about this stuff. If you went to, I'm going to tell you where the heck else that you can go later on here, because you know what goes on with us. You know where to find our tweets on the Twitter, our faces on the Facebook, and all the other stuff that goes on in the social network of this gigantic universes of the galaxy. I keep forgetting, what's bigger, a galaxy or universe? I don't know. And then on top of it all, the scheduled scan was completed. While we're going on, who is that anyway? That's Xfinity. Scans go on, all sorts of things are constantly happening. And so we continue. Let's first get Mr. Savino, and then we'll double up, because I know Mr. Wolodar is around somewhere. And maybe he can save me with his veritas, he's got the truth. He could save me. The truth can, you know what?
It'll set you free.
Well, you know, the last person who told me that, I had a good comeback for that.
Yes, what was it?
I'm already free. Thank you.
You must know the truth.
No, you see, that's a, you got the comeback of the comeback. You see, gotta be snotty, right? Gotta be a wiseacre. Then I do. Okay, then I do. I am the truth. How about that? I'll be like that guy in the Ernest Hemingway book. Nick. What was his name? That character, Nick something. Nick.
Nick Hemingway, did you say?
Yeah, Hemingway. He used to do those short stories with that character, Nick.
Yeah.
Something. Nick, I don't know. Anyway,
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'll shut up.
How have you been?
I've been I think I've gone through a wormhole.
Oh, well.
I'm in another universe or something. It's a lot of controversy here and
Southern Cal.
Based on a motorcycle shop that opened up right next door to us.
Oh, I didn't see that on the CBS Evening News. So this must be local dramas going on here, huh?
Local drama. And a bunch of us wrote a letter to the city, and this morning I got a letter from the motorcycle's lawyer.
The motorcycle has a lawyer?
Yeah, the motorcycle.
The motorcycle shop lawyer.
The people who own the motorcycle shop.
Oh, okay.
They're a lawyer, which actually I thought was a positive thing because of all the projected imaginary things I thought they could do, you know.
Mm.
Being motorcycle people.
And being someone who can project a lot of imaginary things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The two fit together like a wormhole. So I was going to spend the morning brushing up on quantum physics.
Oh, boy.
But then I realized as soon as I get into that subject, it's like, you know what? I can't brush up on quantum physics.
You don't have to either, because I think the freshness of listening to Dr. Woldar, who knows all the stuff, you know. And then I like to ask questions that appear stupid, because I know that a lot of my listeners are probably out there asking stupid questions.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope your listeners and my future listeners are.
Yeah. That's right, the future.
As stupid as I am.
Future in Wine and Truth with Mr. Tom Savino coming up after his long-awaited and needed vacation. Which is, when are you leaving for?
I'm sticking around till election day, and then I'm leaving.
Okay, and you're going away, and you're gonna sit on a beach somewhere.
I may. I'm going up to Big Sur.
Oh, there's no beaches up there, really.
Well, there is, but they're kind of wild and crazy. They're not the kind that you just sit down and relax, because you have to like protect yourself from drowning and things. You know, they're.
Yeah, the big trees. I remember the trees up there were gigantic.
Yeah, redwoods.
Well, not just the redwoods. There were even going through the mountain. There's a mountain there, isn't there?
That's a long time ago.
Of course, it's a long time ago for me, not to the topography, which, of course, is probably eons old. It's nothing.
Eons old, yeah.
You know. Savino Veritas will give you more about that, but, of course, Tom's show will be following me. He will be brushing up when he gets back from Big Sur. The little man in Big Sur. How about that? You gonna take notes or something?
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, you got to take some notes, and you should bring.
I'm gonna get my tape recorder on the whole way, so I'm going to comment on things that I see and things that happen, and I'll edit it. Maybe it could be one of the Veritas shows. I don't know.
I think that's going to be just fine on the road with Tom Savino. And his Veritas. We're here at Cotolo Chronicles, and very shortly we're just going to plug in Dr. Woldar as soon as I figure out again how to add a name. I see he's online already and raring to go. Well, it's a teacher, and you're a teacher, so you know how important it is to be punctual.
Yes.
You actually can't help it after a while, right? I mean, it just comes naturally when you're.
Yeah. You know, you've commented on my earlier history of not being punctual.
Oh, yeah.
Since I have been a teacher for almost 30 years, that has changed.
Night and day for you.
I
guess some of us grow up. Some others don't at all. But now that's all going to happen here on SRN Media Works, live and exclusive. And, of course, all you stations out there that are on the network of rebroadcasts with my show and any other shows that you do that and can inquire about rerunning the Savino Veritas programs when they... Oh, hear that? Boop, boop, and someone else. You know, it's amazing how... It's just amazing. Come 9 o'clock. I mean, everyone I know. It's 9 o'clock. And what happens? Everyone I know comes to the phone, the things. You know, I'm on. Don't they know I'm on? They don't know. They don't care. They figure... This is where they can get me. I don't know. I was, I got so many things on my mind as you, well, which is not unusual, but I'm going to try to clear the decks because I know Dr. Woldar's, topic is going to bring up many, many questions.
Indeed.
Because, and I don't really have anything else, to do or promote or what have you right now. I'm not going to waste any time with that stuff. Keep buying License to Skill, everyone. I enjoy, you know, that knock on the mailman. Yes. Here, Frank, it's another royalty check from Amazon. Well, thank you, Mr. Mailman. Please. I enjoy getting them and mail. See, and they email me. They've all been emailing now. That's what I got to do. I got to email them and then I'll write them and I'll call them and the phone will ring. Do that. And then I don't know what else. I already told you the election. I'm going to be on the Behind the Mic show. I'll mention it again here because Tom will be gone after Election Day for the midterm elections with a bunch of newsworthy guys who do news things and a girl, women who do news things on Behind the Mic radio, WB, what would that be, BMR, whatever, on Tuesday night from 8 to 10 or whatever. I'm going to be there contributing. I don't know if I'll be contributing. I'll be the spring in the mattress. Let's put it that way. How about that?
So you're going to be commenting on the returns, huh?
That's right. And I'm going to be holding my hand to my ear. Yes.
Yeah.
This just in. You know, people do that even when, I mean, I have headphones on and I'm on radio.
Yeah.
Why do I, this just in. I'll be trying to set the record straight. Because what everyone will be doing is talking about the results, and they'll be talking about the polls, but I will be talking about how the people are betting, wagering on this particular election, because wagering goes on in all the legal wagering countries. So I'll be reporting to you from Ladbrokes and William Hill and a number of other sites where people all around the world are betting. So they have no interest in who wins. That's, you know, they just want to make money. So they get odds and everything. And that's wonderful too, because they're usually more correct than the polls. So it'll be fun.
No, we Americans can't do that, right?
I mean, well, no, technically not, because I don't, you know, it's really a weird thing, this whole internet gambling stuff. I don't know. I just know that, look, it's like the, you know what you can't do either? You can't play something on YouTube and record it. Hello?
Oh.
You know? Yeah, it's against the law. Remember, we did a whole show on
it.
Oh,
yeah, that's right.
You know, I want to mention something, too, because it dawned on me that we didn't mention something when we did that show about how, you know, music has changed and how all the artists aren't getting royalties anymore and stuff, right?
Yeah.
But you know how they're making money? I forgot to mention this, and it's a major part of the conversation.
Well, how is that?
Well, what they did was they started licensing their songs to commercials, TV commercials and radio commercials.
Oh.
And that, in turn, knocked out all the jingle writers. There are no more jingle writers.
Wow.
Because Philadelphia cream cheese is now easy, according to Lionel Richie's song. I'm easy like
this. Oh, wow.
So Philadelphia cream
cheese. That's an interesting part of the discussion. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how I forgot that, because it's happening so much that there just aren't any more jingles. Everything except that, till that Jimmy Dean's, the man who plays, I gotta know, find out the man who plays the son in the Jimmy Dean sausage commercials. Have you seen those?
No.
That's that music's original. Dan. But that's not a jingle. But anyway, you know, you watch Philadelphia cream cheese commercials and you hear Lionel Richie. There's a couple of meds. Now, meds, of course, when they're selling meds, pharmaceutical places selling meds, that's a very good place for, you know, 60s and 70s music, because that's the audience.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, yeah.
So we got the zombies doing Time of the Season, and that's I heard that. There's just a number of them. And so anyway, that's what they're doing. They're doing anything they can do to get money. So the point is what, you know, you can't. No, you can't bet. Sorry. Please, no wagering.
Wow.
Let's get Dr. Woldar on the, because I know he has lots to say about a lot of things. And besides, that's 21 minutes. I never do the time in the show. 21 minutes after the hour. I don't do it. Why? Because it doesn't matter. It's
time. Time and temp guy. Remember? Oh, I do time and temp on www.
Time and temp. Let's see. Add to group call. Who? Yup. Who's Yup? Oh, they don't even know this person. What do I do here? You're where? I lost you now. Where are you? I got to go back to you. Here you are. Let's go to this contact. No, here. Recent. Let's go to Tom. Oh, you're not even there. Oh, here you
I'm
are.
I'm here.
I got you. Me? Okay. Let's get the add to conversation. Let's find it. It's somewhere here. Here. It looks like add participants. We're going to get add people to this call. How about a person?
Wow.
How about a person and his name be Andrew Woldar. Add to call. You still there, Tom?
Yes.
Hey, it's just working. Excellent. Now let's see.
Salami. Salami one. Does that mean there's a Salami?
Does it say Salami on there?
Yes, it does.
Really?
That's
yeah.
That's interesting because I thought. I mean, I know I have many things under the name Salami. But I thought my Skype was under my name, but I guess, oh, well, whatever, we're connected.
Doc, it's just another facet of Tom's campaign to be taken seriously.
Yeah.
Well, welcome. Hi. Hello. How are you guys?
Good. I am. I speak for me. How about you, Frank? I didn't even ask you before.
Well, you know, everything is now and right now. I'm fine. So that's what we'll do. We have the conference call going on here, and everybody, audience across the globe, here's Dr. Andrew Woldar. It's been a long time since you've been here.
It has. I'm not sure. What has it been, like 3 months?
I'm not counting. I just know a long time. You know, a long time for you and I, not for the topography.
That's true.
And because that's been here forever. And you're going to.
Absolutely.
But I'm glad you found a topic, came back. Because, you know, I think of you all the time when I hear these. Well, anything from, you know, the harvest. Tonight's the harvest moon, the biggest moon you'll ever see. You know, everything from that to the sunspots that they keep talking about and anything else. And then there's this. I saw part of this movie, Gravity.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you, I was glued to my seat.
I love that picture, actually.
That's great.
But anyway, apparently that joke doesn't work.
You were glued. I'm slow tonight.
I didn't see it all. I saw it from, I think from George Clooney's death. But anyway, fascinating little movie. Technically, it's a chick flick, isn't it?
Gravity?
Yeah.
Well, why? Because Sandra Bullock stars in it?
Well, she's the main character, and she's the one who makes it through and does everything she has to do. She's the one who, it's her, she's it, right?
It's practically a women's show.
Yeah, right?
Well, it is. I guess you could say it's sort of a new kind of chick flick because the, you know, get the hero, the heroine, you know, the woman person does all, survives all the obstacles.
What's the old type?
The old type is always romantic. A chick flick, you know, usually the chick flicks, you used to refer to those as those movies that interest, stories about love affairs and relationships and all that stuff.
Yeah, the chick flick referred to the fact that it was a flick for chicks.
Yes. And the way you're using it is more of a chick flick, as the main character who prevails is a chick.
And I am using it. There's no doubt about that.
And you have every right to.
It's Cthulhu Chronicles, and I'm chronicling. Now, you guys are chronicling too, though. So why don't we get into it here now, because we're not going to do any more commercials or anything like that. Doc, we all read the concept of this, and I didn't know that Lewis Carroll was another guy, and he was also a mathematician. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that and how we get into this rabbit hole thing?
Well, the rabbit hole is going to involve quantum mechanics, and I'm going to introduce the concepts in such a way that I'm pretty sure you'll be able to grasp a great deal of it. So Dodgson was a mathematics professor at Cambridge. He was at Christ College. And as the story goes, look this up, but just from my recollection, he kind of wrote the story on the fly while sailing along in a boat with his niece.
You mean Alice in Wonderland?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. That's what it was first titled. And there are many different facets of the story that reveal some rather deep and profound mathematical concepts. But they were mainly philosophical views about mathematics, the direction of mathematics in the day. For example, the whole introducing such things as the least ordinal, you know, and stuff like that. So I don't really want to get into that stuff, but you can find all kinds of – he used to love logic, and he plays a great deal all throughout the story with various kinds of logical phrases that are misinterpreted by the characters to be the converse of what he's really saying. So he played a great deal with that as well. Excuse me.
Let me ask you a question. I mean, we've all seen various versions of Alice in Wonderland, and unlike The Wizard of Oz, Alice in Wonderland doesn't have a definitive version, does it, anywhere? Yeah, right? Or...
You're breaking up on me. Am I breaking up on you?
No.
We can hear you.
We can hear you fine. Oh, there he goes.
Well, the original story is the definitive version. And then, yes, but I mean, even in The Wizard of Oz, if you look at the original book by Baum.
Yeah, totally different.
Yeah. You'll really see differences there, too.
We did a show on that a couple of weeks ago, or a month ago, or something like that. The difference of the books and the stuff. But I mean, Alice in Wonderland. Aside from that, Walt Disney. I think it was the Walt Disney thing. The people who know of Alice in Wonderland certainly are not aware. Maybe aware of what critics found in it that was political, but not scientific. So, give us that.
Well, I'm not prepared to give you that, really. I mean, I prepared in quantum mechanics.
Well, that's what I mean, the scientific part of it. That's what I meant.
Well, it doesn't involve quantum mechanics. Here, let me see if I can dig something up.
Oh, okay. Well, then go on where you were going on before I said there's no definitive version. You were talking about...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just suffice it to say that he played around with mathematics, and he also got the political and philosophical end of mathematics. He tried to make... his judgments known about, he was anti-abstraction in a lot of different ways. But specific examples, you know, there are many, but they're not really worth pointing out or discussing. Let's take our trip down the rabbit hole instead. That's what I thought I'm here for.
Okay, well, yeah, but before you do that, though, was there an anti-abstraction movement at the time or something? What do you mean he was, what do you mean he was anti-abstraction? I don't, what does that mean?
There's something, mathematics took a turn up to a certain point in time. All mathematicians were physicists and all physicists were mathematicians. You couldn't tell them apart. And then came the world of pure mathematics, where mathematics was taken to abstraction.
Oh, okay.
Which meant that you started to build various configurations and various laws and theorems based on an axiom system. And this level of abstraction it's really lying at the very truth of mathematics. But there are people who felt that mathematics without application to reality is worthless, and he might have been one of those. That's what I mean by against abstraction.
Okay.
Okay, so What I want to do, first thing I'm going to do, is discuss, I want to emphasize major differences between quantum mechanics and classical mechanics. So classical mechanics is the mechanics of Isaac Newton. It's the physics that occurs in the realm in which we live, the macro level, although there are certainly quantum effects that make their appearance known even at the macro level. But everything that's really happening at the micro level is very, very spooky. In fact, there'd been a debate it goes back really to the Greek philosophers. But what it was is about the nature of light. Is light made from tiny little particles, or is light made from waves? And this debate has gone on and on for a very long time. And Newton established what people followed Newton, saying light is definitely made up of particles. And then comes the double split experiment in the early 1700s. And afterwards, the scientific world is saying, well, now light is made up of waves. It cannot be argued. And then around the late 1800s, comes the photoelectric effect, and now people are changing their mind back to particles. And this goes on and on and on to almost the present time, actually, to the early 20th century. So I want to tell you about this experiment that actually first occurred in the early 1700s, but the results were not that surprising. They were not that illuminating. I guess it's a pun on light. I didn't mean to do that. But what happens eventually is we'll see that when this experiment is repeated in the early 1900s, real strange, weird stuff starts happening. And it is sometimes, quantum mechanics is sometimes called, quote, spooky action at a distance. So perfect for nearly the Halloween, right?
You mean?
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
You mean SAD? Yeah. That's sad. Spooky action at a distance.
Yep.
Sad.
That's like a trick or treating in a neighborhood that's not, you know, a foreign neighborhood.
Yeah, I
precisely what I was thinking.
I got you, Frank. It's sad.
Sad. Yeah. Strictly action decision.
Action at a, there's three A's there.
Can't believe they really use the word spooky in, okay.
Yeah. So this experiment, as I say, it was designed to tell whether light was made up of tiny particles or waves. And so here's how the experiment is arranged. You're going to shoot a laser beam at a plate, an opaque plate that's pierced by two parallel vertical strips. So the light can travel through the strips, but not through the rest of the plate. And it's projected on the other side from where you're shooting the light is a screen, a dark screen. So what happens is when you shoot the light at the plate, that light which passes through the vertical strips, these open, you know, cutouts on the plate, is going to actually land, get illuminated on this dark screen in the background. Mm-hmm. So what they were looking at was what would occur on the screen. So let's imagine that we're doing this experiment, but let's imagine that we're doing it instead of with a laser beam, we're actually shooting tiny little marbles at the plate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what does our intuition tell us? Basically says the marbles are just going to pass through, you know, some of them are going to bounce off the plate, but those that pass through the slits are going to maintain the trajectory, they're going to hit the screen, and they're going to hit it in two vertical bands that are perfectly aligned with the slits.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happens. That's exactly what happens experimentally. Okay, now I want to repeat the experiment. I still have the plate with the slits, I still have the dark screen, but now I'm going to send a wave through. Okay, I'm sending a wave through the plate. You can think of a water wave, for example, but really any wave. Now, that portion, a lot of the wave, of course, is going to bounce off the plate. But that portion of the wave that passes through the slits, right, is going to create two new waves, one emanating from each new slit. And as these new waves, can you imagine this? As these new waves are propagating toward the screen, they're going to interfere with one another.
Hmm. I'm trying to picture this.
Right. So just imagine water. So imagine that you have these two holes. So mm-hmm. you have one big wave of water now, and it's coming at it, you know, and the biggest part of the front of the wave, the crest, is going to strike the screen. The sides, you know, a little apart from the crest, are going to go through the slits, and now these new waves are going to start to emerge from the slits. They're going to be smaller. Now, as the waves propagate, they're going to get larger and larger, as water waves do, as any wave does. But you see, the waves are going to start to interfere with one another, which means that there are places where the waves will be in phase, but there are also places where the waves will be out of phase, which means that they'll cancel each other out. And the result of this is you'll no longer get these two vertical bands I was talking about, remember, from the marbles, the bands that are aligned with the slits. Instead, you're going to get on the screen what's called an interference pattern. Okay, can you visualize it? It's an interference pattern is going to be a whole bunch of discrete vertical bands on the screen. Okay, and then the bands are separated by darkness, which is where the waves canceled out. So you really need two slits, you see, to do this experiment to allow the waves to interfere with one another. Because if you're just doing a single slit, you'll get the same result with the wave as you would with the marbles.
What idiot said, let's use one split? Did they throw him out of the room eventually?
It really reminds you of when they first introduced the double blades for shaving. You know, and then it took them like another 30 years to decide, hey, two blades are better than one, maybe three are better than two. I mean, what took them 30 years to decide that? I don't know.
Cause they're
I think they're up to five now.
Well, they're starting to sell the original ones again. In the middle of the night,
he's because he deals with all this old stuff, porn stars.
The old ones. This is what your father used, and you only needed one.
Right.
It's only 1995 or something.
I don't want to take up too much time.
You better.
But
because we don't want we gotta know what we're doing as we move along here. So go ahead. I know it's going to be a pertinent question. Go.
Well, yeah. I just want to. I'm not getting it. The particles going through the slit. Now let me see if I got this. You got a plate like a dish, right? Or plate.
Big square metal plate. Say.
Okay, a square metal plate.
And you cut out these two slits in them. These two vertical slits.
Are the slits parallel?
Yeah.
And they're vertical, and they're in the metal plate, and the plate is standing vertically in relation to the marbles that are going to go through.
Absolutely.
So then you shoot the marbles, and the marbles are symbolic of the particles.
Yes.
And the marbles will hit the plate and bounce off or whatever, and the ones that go through the slits – will hit the back screen.
Well, how can marbles go through the slits? How big are these slits?
The slits are large. Okay. So what happens is the marbles will hit the screen directly in line with the slits.
Right. There won't be any change in their trajectory. It'll just hit the screen.
Right. There won't be any change in their east-west trajectory. So they're just going to hit the screen.
Okay. When it gets to the wave part, then I'm a little lost because do you have two separate waves of water?
You start off with one wave.
Okay.
So you make a big, imagine that you have water, so you create this very big wave.
All right.
So the crest of the wave is going to be centered. So the crest actually is going to land between the slits.
All right.
Slit where the slits are. Now, what happens is part of the wave goes through the slits.
Right.
Well, those parts of the wave now emanate into new waves. They keep their wave motion, but you see, what you've done now is you've created two new centers for new waves. So these waves that are coming through are going to get larger and larger till they start to overlap with each other. And that's what causes the interference pattern.
So like if you wanted to use the term like identity, all right, you have one wave that has an identity of I'm a wave.
Okay.
But then when it hits the plate and some of it goes through the slits, then with the part, those, that water that goes through the slits now become two identities. Is that right?
Right. They become two smaller. They're like two children of the original wave.
Oh, wow. That's trippy. No wonder they call it spooky. I mean,
well, okay. Not down to the spooky. Boy, are you in for spooky if you think that's spooky? Because we're in for real spooky. So to summarize, what happens is you get different results depending on the form of the matter that you're sending through the slits.
Okay.
The part of the particle, you're going to get like the marble result, two bands, parallel bands. But with a wave, you're going to get an interference pattern. These are several vertical stripes on the illuminating the screen. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens is we're just starting down the rabbit hole, to be honest with you. They discovered that light was behaving like a wave, which is exactly, in other words, it really, when they repeated the experiment in the early 1900s, they got the same result as in the 1700s, except here they had an axe to grind. Because at this point, they were 99% convinced that light should behave like particles. So they got the same wave result. All right, so, you know, I mean, Einstein could have been wrong. Maybe light is wave-like. But you see, their intuition was so much in favor of light being a particle that they actually gave a name to the particle of light. They called it a photon. This is before anyone ever observed a photon. You know, so in fact, maybe they thought maybe these photons that you're shooting through, maybe they're somehow interfering with each other.
I had a photon took up my entire bedroom.
You know, Doctor, I think Frank and I are like the two guys throwing spitballs at you.
Well,
I love it.
We do too, because you have no idea. I know Tom a little bit less than I'm sure, but you have no idea. Let's say, you know, you said how you made identities. You called them identities, okay? Well, you have no idea what the crew in my brain is doing right now to get to absorb this information and put it in the correct files. They are moving around like nuts. Now, let's go back here for 1 second so that we did that experiment to prove that light was waves and not marbles, not waves and not particles.
Initially did the experiment to find out there was no preconceived notion. They wanted, there was evidence here that it was wave-like. There was evidence there that it was particle-like. And initially when they did the experiment, they did it with an open mind. They found this wave-like behavior I just described, and they decided light's like waves. And this stood up for a long, long time, but then along came this other experiment, this photoelectric effect. And that actually showed that light had a particle behavior. So now the physicists became confused. In fact, at this point in time, like now we're around the time of early 1920s, around the time of Einstein. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, let me add that Einstein got a Nobel Prize, but he didn't get it for his theory of relativity. He got it for his photoelectric effect work.
But no one knows that. Who? I mean, there's a Jeopardy question, huh?
There's more to come.
That's a Jeopardy.
Right. Yeah, I have plenty of remarks of that nature. But anyway, at this point, the physicists are very confused because they're sure.
Get in line.
Light is behaving like particles, but they ran the same experiment that was done in the early 1700s and got the same result. So they're wondering, how can this be? They were expecting a different result now because they've moved toward the belief, the very prominent belief among the scientific community at the time, was that light was made up of particles. So they're wondering, how are they getting this wave-like result? And that's where you are right now.
Okay, and where we are here right now, and everyone listening, this is Cotolo Chronicles, and Dr. Andrew Woldar is here from Villa Vista. That's the wrong. I said Villa Vista College. It's not Villa Vista. What is Villa Vista College? That's not your college.
It's not.
No. you see what's happening with those guys inside there? And we're talking about how a light where are we going? We're going to get into wormholes from this, right? We're going to go into...
If time permits.
Okay. And Tom Savino is here with us, too. Okay, so that's where we are at that point. It's 1920-something. Einstein didn't get his Nobel Peace Prize for the theory of relativity. He got it for biparticle light endeavors or something, right? Okay.
Well, not a Nobel Peace Prize, but right. A Nobel Prize in physics.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So now they're going to rerun the experiment.
Villanova. I'm sorry. It's Villanova, isn't it?
It is.
I had to straighten that out so that everyone realized I was still cognizant. Go.
Very
Go on.
So, so now they're rerunning the experiment and getting the same results. However, their point of view is very different. They're expecting particle behavior. So what they said is perhaps the photons that we're shooting through it, perhaps there's some force we cannot, you know, identify or predict, but it's causing the photons to interfere with one another, and that's what's giving this wave-like result on the screen, even though they are truly photons, particles. So what they decided to do, and this is clever, they said, well, let's shoot them through one at a time. Now they can't collide with each other.
Mm.
Guess what?
They didn't collide with one another.
Huh?
They didn't collide with one another. Or they did. You said, guess what?
They didn't collide with one another. Right. Each particle collided with itself.
It collided
each
with itself.
Each particle collided with itself.
At your beginning, we're about to be 10% down the rabbit hole when you grasp this. So an individual particle, it's a photon here, is entering both slits simultaneously, even though it's a particle. And it's interfering with itself, and that's what's causing an interference pattern on the screen. And this is unthinkable.
So,
yes.
how could one particle go through two separate splits at one time? Because a particle is a super small thing. I mean,
welcome to the world of quantum mechanics.
Mm-hmm. It's as small as you get. That's why it's quantum mechanics.
Welcome to the world of quantum mechanics.
Yeah.
And this is exactly what happened. Okay, but we're not, believe me, we're not even down the rabbit hole yet. We're just starting. We're just starting our descent. So the physicists decided, how about if we actually measure? Something's wrong here. So let's actually measure which slit each individual photon is passing through on its way toward the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So get this now. So they hooked up detectors at the slits, and they wired it to a computer so that the computer could record the data.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? The interference pattern vanished. Back to two vertical bands.
So that was, which means that would be more like behaving like the particle.
Exactly. Why? Just
so wait, you're talking. I think you're talking about what I have always heard over the decades. People say, it says sometimes it behaves like a particle, sometimes it behaves like a wave.
That's right.
This is when they discovered that.
This is called the wave particle duality. No, it's not. What happens? This is kind of leading to an explanation of it, which is what quantum mechanics. We owe quantum mechanics is owed to. Centuries of scientists trying to solve this dilemma about light, because going back to the 1600s, people knew that light exhibited wave behavior and particle behavior. It depended how you were measuring things.
Wow.
So what happens is, you're right, what happens is that we're starting to see what is now known, what is now called particle wave duality. Okay, this is just the beginning of it. But the important thing to notice is that the particles behave differently when detectors were hooked up and wired to a computer that would be able to record the data. It's as if the particles, it's as if the photons knew they were being watched.
So they better behave.
They better behave. But this is now to be honest with you, we're only halfway down the rabbit hole.
Oh, good thing you're being honest with us. If you started lying, we wouldn't know the difference.
So, So that this is that's well, another thing that I hear over the decades and not know a thing about, but that was sometimes the observer, she changed the outcome.
Oh, yeah, the thing about watching the object that's being watched is being changed because it's being watched?
Absolutely. And you just kind of touched on what we saw here, but we're not quite there yet. But yes, you see, when you hooked up detectors and recorded data, the particles behave one way, like particles, and or I'll say light behaved like particles. But when you didn't look, when you didn't observe, when you didn't detect, they behave like waves. So this is kind of what you said embodies that entire thing there, this phenomenon. This phenomenon being that the observer affects the outcome of an experiment.
Does that have anything to do with Schrodinger's cat?
We're getting there.
We're getting to Schrodinger's cat.
Schrodinger's cat, right?
Yeah. Yeah, if we're getting there, if I can make it, and I think I can.
Okay,
we'll shut up.
So, no, it's all right. I enjoy it. But here is really the critical thing. Remember I said we're only halfway down the rabbit hole. So what they decided to do, they said, no. Particles are not changing their behavior because they know when we're watching them and when they're not. It must be that the detector has been disrupting the experiment. Maybe some waves are coming out of it, emitting some kind of, you know. So what they decided to do to once and for all solve everything. Mm-hmm. This is so cool. They left the detectors on, but they pulled the plug to the computer. So are they observing or not? Well, the detector's on, but they're not looking at the results.
Okay.
Wow.
And what happens is, bang, it goes back to the interference pattern.
Whoa.
Because the photons knew exactly when they were being watched.
They knew.
Wow.
They knew. I guess we're personifying this, right?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, because they don't know. They don't know. They don't know Jell-O from French fries. They don't know.
Well, you know.
They're reacting to something, right?
There's a book I've along the way I read Particles of Emotion or something like that, and how your emotions and how your cells know stuff, you know. It has a certain kind of knowledge.
Well, absolutely. I mean, all particles carry knowledge, but they just don't carry knowledge. I've often said that the difference between humans and a lot of other forms of life is that we know and they know, but we're the only ones who know we know.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Just to clarify for anybody, the name of the book was Molecules of Emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I think a lot of that has to do with with brain physics, the psychology of moods in the brain. But here, what's happening is you can't say the particles don't know. Yeah, they don't know Jell-O. Big deal. You know, how far have you gotten in life because you know Jell-O? But they understand things we don't. We understand things they don't. It's a different kind of, you know, cognition.
Yeah, but there's not always room for particles, but there's always room for Jell-O.
So then
more spitballs from Tom and Frank.
Okay, go on. All right.
Settle down with your spitballs, guys.
Okay.
Well, now, there are these two wonderful philosophical quotes that are made by very famous scientists about quantum mechanics. I'm not sure who made them, but one of these quotes I just love, it says, there is no such thing as objective reality.
No such thing as objective reality.
Right. So we all live in subjective reality.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I get that.
Another one is reality is a product of consciousness.
Okay, we'll buy that. Okay, tell me with that, Tom.
Observed. Now I'm going to get on to the cat in the box, but it's not going to be Schrodinger's cat quite yet, because we have to broaden our understanding. If we're going to get to the wormholes, we've got to go a little bit deeper in our understanding of the difference between quantum mechanics and classical mechanics. And I'm going to add some detail. In fact, it'll be a bit mathematical eventually. But let's imagine the following experiment. So you have a cat and you have a plate of poison, and you put the cat and the poison in a box and you seal it. Mm-hmm. Okay, and if the cat eats the poison, it will die, and if it doesn't eat the poison, it will live. These are assumptions. Mm-hmm. So according to classical mechanics, there are only two possible outcomes, or states as they're called. The cat's either dead or the cat's alive. Mm-hmm. And also according to classical mechanics, the fate of the cat is predetermined in the sense that the cat's either dead or alive before an observer looks into the box.
Right. Okay, yeah, because we're not seeing him eat the poison or not eat the poison.
Right, we didn't see it. So when we look in the box, according to classical mechanics, when we look in the box, the cat's fate is revealed, but it hasn't been affected by our looking in the box.
Right.
Okay. And this is not the case in the quantum world, where we talked about the double slit experiment. Observation does affect outcome.
Okay.
So what we want to do, and in fact, so along comes Erwin Schrödinger, who is a very, very clever physicist of that era, the Einstein era. And he introduces a quantum effect into this cat experiment I just said. And it's a thought experiment. So then no cats were harmed in these experiments. This is a thought experiment. But he modifies it in such a way that now it becomes quantum mechanical. It's very clever. He says, suppose instead of introducing the poison in the form of poison on a plate, suppose you introduce it in the form of harmful radiation that's released from a decaying radioactive atom. Mm-hmm. So if the atom decays, then the radiation kills the cat, and if the atom doesn't decay, there won't be any radiation, the cat will survive.
Okay.
So the important thing to note here is that decaying of an atom is a quantum mechanical event. So now we're in the world of observation mattering. And mm-hmm. this is Schrödinger's cat. Okay, it's not just poison. In order for it to be Schrödinger's cat's thought experiment, the delivery of the poison has to be by some quantum mechanical phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And by the way, let me make a little aside, like I did about Einstein, for example, getting the Nobel Prize in Physics. Schrödinger, what most people don't realize is he didn't come up with this Schrödinger's cat, this thought experiment, as any kind of serious possibility to support quantum mechanics. He didn't want to promote quantum mechanics. He wanted to undermine it. Mm. I mean, what he hoped that people would look at the absurdity of this experiment and say, that's preposterous. So quantum mechanics can't be right. Mm-hmm. And but it turns out that since Schrödinger's time, this thought experiment's been universally accepted as amazingly accurate reflection of quantum mechanics, even at the mathematical level, I got to add. So what's going on is Schrödinger, he assumes an exalted position next to Einstein. These are two scientists that had no faith whatsoever in the validity of quantum mechanics. They both tried to undermine it. And yet today they're regarded as two of its founding fathers.
Wow, so, that's really, I find that interesting.
Yeah.
Well, the whole thing is interesting, but that they were actually trying to shoot down the idea.
Exactly.
Wow.
They both came up with paradoxes, and Schrödinger's cat was a paradox that he thought would get people thinking, well, quantum mechanics can't be right. This is absurd. It turned out it is right. So so to get into more mathematically detailed about Schrödinger's cat, which we can do, in quantum mechanics, you can have different kinds of states. You have observed states, which is, by the way, all the classical states, like dead and alive, I'm going to refer to them as observed states. You'll see why in a moment. But you also have mixed states. Now, mixed states, or they're called sometimes superposed states, if I look at Schrödinger's cat as a particular example, there are four possible quantum states before that box is opened.
Four?
There's four. Mm. Unlike classical, where there were two, now there's four.
Okay.
State number one is dead. And that's an observed state. Alive, again, mm-hmm. observed state. And now we have a mixed state, dead alive. And there's a fourth state, which is a mixed state, and that's not dead, not alive.
And fifth, wanted, dead or alive. Wait, how can explain quickly? Can you quickly explain dead and alive at the same time as a state? What does that mean?
You were so damn funny. Dead or alive, that was beautiful. Yeah, dead or alive. It's a mixed state.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, it's an actual quantum mechanical state that occurs prior to an observation. See, only observed states will be revealed when someone observes, just like in the double slit experiment.
Do you mean the process of finding out is dead and alive? Is that it?
It's kind of a mix of dead and alive.
Oh, okay.
It's actually a probability distribution, which we'll talk about. But and also you have a state of not dead, not alive, which is very much different from dead alive.
Sounds it to me.
Not dead, not alive.
Not dead, not alive.
Right. So now let's introduce an observer. So once an observer looks into the box, these four quantum states, which are all simultaneously existing with certain probabilities, must collapse to one of the two observed states, that is either to dead or to alive. So this is what's happening in quantum mechanics that is affecting what we witnessed before, what we talked about, the double slit experiment where we hooked up detectors and a computer and then pulled a plug in the computer, and we saw that observation really collapsed several mixed states, okay, quantum states, into one of a certain number of possible observed states. Now, if you are able to grasp this one essential concept, okay, this concept that observation doesn't merely reveal a state in quantum mechanics, it affects the outcome, affects the state. If you're able to grasp that one essential concept, you've learned more tonight about quantum mechanics than most people will learn in a lifetime.
It's the way of the future. Way of the future. Wow. It's the way of the future. Way of the future. It's the way
yeah, of the I heard enough of that earlier.
It's the way of the future. It's the way of the future. I think I got
that. Yeah, that reminds me, Skyle Hall says hello.
Yes, he has. He's the one who mentioned that I should mention Schrodinger's cat.
Yes.
Which is not, by the way, I want to tell everyone out there, this is not the cat that was out of the bag, because that cat was this was a box, and they opened it up. When they did it, was he dead?
They didn't do the experiment.
They just
a thought experiment.
Yes.
Oh. Okay. They did it. Hey, Schrodinger, are we going to use your cat? Whose cat are we going to use here? And where's the poison? Oh, I got some. Okay. This is Cthulhu Chronicles. Dr. Andrew Voldar is here. And we hope that the next hour, we're going to get to where we're going down this rabbit hole.
Yeah, the pace has been fairly good.
Okay, fine. Then we're going to move on. Tom Savino's with us also here. And we're moving right along. This is Cthulhu Chronicles. Now, we had the observer is coming in. Is that where we are now?
Yeah. Are you guys getting it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I got
it. I mean, I'm not getting like the not dead, not alive. I don't understand that.
Yeah, it's hard to explain. Let me go. The mathematics, you have to understand that a lot of this quantum phenomena is really based on mathematical things. More so, this is where there's a problem to try and interpret it, because our brains are classical. Mm-hmm. When was the last time you saw a subatomic particle? You know, so our brains are very, very classical.
Yeah,
our senses are classical. We believe time is a straight arrow, which it isn't. We believe time is absolute, which it isn't. We don't see a lot of different quantum mechanical effects in everyday life. So what happens is we always resort to, when we hear a new quantum mechanical phenomenon described somehow, we try and interpret it in classical terms, and that's a failure.
Right.
Okay, but
that
you
I get.
See, yeah.
I said that I get. Okay, go ahead. Go on.
But they're based on mathematical things, and that's the point. The mathematics is real in there. For example, are you guys familiar with the concept of a function? It's an easy concept. What happens, a function, if you put in a particular input, the function spits out an output.
Unless you put it at the junction. The function at the junction is not, okay, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Because
and,
it's a particular place. But what do you mean by function? Is that, that's not a real, is
that's
that a,
exactly what it is.
Is that a noun?
Hmm?
Is that a noun? Is it a person, place, or thing? What is the function?
It's a function. It's
a purpose, a function,
if I describe it, it's a mathematical entity. It's a rule. It's a rule that's oh, geez, if I really explain it mathematically, I have to talk about ordered pairs.
No. Okay, forget it. Let's go.
So the example of a function, y equal x squared. So if you input x equal 3, it outputs 3 squared, which is 9.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Okay.
So that's what a function is.
I got you.
And what happens is, I want you to imagine a particular function. Functions don't have to only deal with inputs and outputs that are numbers. You know, so I want this function I'm describing is going to be the following, it's going to have the following feature. You input, you have an experiment you're going to run, and you input all the possible outcomes of the experiment.
Okay.
And the function for each outcome, potential outcome, it spits out the probability that outcome will occur.
Oh, now we're talking probabilities. We're talking about odds. Now we're talking about percentages, right?
So, for example, yeah. suppose the experiment is flip a fair coin.
Right.
So it's going to come up heads and tails, same number of times. So what happens is, what the function does is you input tails, it comes out one half, and you input heads, and it comes out one half. Okay, or you take a fair die. If you roll a die, what are the outcomes? The outcomes are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6. And each one of those inputs generates the same outcome, 1/6.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Such a function is called a probability distribution.
Okay. Got that.
It turns out that a quantum wave, mathematically speaking, is nothing more than a probability distribution. And it's called the wave function. Now, specifically, hopefully this will give some rise to understanding of the double slit experiment. The wave function will give the probability of where along the wave a particle is likely to be found once you observe. Right? So you know that once you observe, you're going to see, remember that observation is what reduced us from the interference pattern, the wave-like behavior, to particle behavior. So here you have a wave, but now you're going to observe. And when you observe, it collapses to a particle. Well, where will the particle be located depends on the wave function. It's giving the probability at every point on the wave, the probability that the particle is likely to be found there once it's observed. Okay, so that's called collapsing the wave function. It's also called quantum decoherence. But I like collapsing the wave function because it's more suggestive phrase, isn't it? You have you have a wave function. And when the observer looks in quantum mechanics, the observer collapses the wave function. So that's why the wave comes to what looks like a particle. Okay?
Okay.
Mm.
So,
Questions?
No.
Okay.
Good. We're going to start then, I guess, we'll start with quantum entanglement. Now, this is going to lead us directly toward the whole idea of a wormhole. Quantum entanglement is another mind-baffling phenomenon. Okay. Maybe not in and of itself, but you'll see why later, soon, I hope. So, in quantum entanglement, you have two or more particles that are linked together in a system in such a way that you always know the quantum state of the system, but you don't know the quantum states of those particles making up the system. Okay, so I'm going to give you a nice classical example, a very easy classical example of a two-particle system. When we have two particles that are entangled, we refer to them as an entangled pair.
Okay.
And so what I'm going to give now is a classical interpretation of a entangled pair. So suppose two people are asked to vote pro or con on a certain issue. And it's a secret ballot.
Okay.
Now let's suppose that after the votes are compiled, it turns out that there's a tie. One voted pro and one voted con.
Okay.
Well, you know the state of the system. One pro, one con. But you don't know the states of the people who are particles now who make up the system. You don't know, in other words, say Tom and Frank are the voters. I don't know. I know that the result is one pro, one con. So I certainly know the state of the system, but there are two possibilities, aren't there? For it could be Tom voted pro and Frank con, or it could have been Tom voted con and Frank pro. So I don't really know. I don't know the states of the individual people. And this is what I mean by that, the fact that when you have an entangled pair, you know the quantum state of the system, but you don't know, or of the pair, but you don't know the quantum state of each particle in the pair.
Okay. Got that's that. Good. That was a good analogy. Thank mm-hmm. you.
Okay, good, good. So if we were to somehow learn how Frank or Tom voted, then we'd automatically know everything.
Okay.
All right, so the same thing is true basically with particles, with quantum particles in an entangled pair. Well, okay, almost. So the problem with the quantum world is it's so much more complicated. In this particular case, so this reason for this added complication is that in quantum mechanics, the observer is supposed to affect the outcome of an experiment. Okay, that's one thing that we agree on. I mean, we agree that we understand that that's something we learned tonight. You know, what's behind it may be a little fuzzy, but we accept this now. In quantum mechanics, the observer affects the outcome of an experiment.
Right.
Now, that means that if you know, if you happen to know the state of an entangled pair, and you come to observe one of the particles,
mm-hmm.
that means you collapse the wave function on that particle, on the wave. You're collapsing the wave function, and now you know a particular property of the particle. And this means that you automatically, just like in my example, since you know the overall state, you now know this. It means you know the state of the other particle as well.
Right. Okay. If you use the voting analogy, I got it.
Yeah. So entangled pairs, like you can create entangled pairs. You can create two electrons at the same time, for example. And what happens is, so they have this neutral quantum state. What it means is if you impart a kind of clockwise spin to one, then the other one will automatically, instantaneously, go clockwise.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be opposed in order to cancel one another out. Okay, so this is kind of bizarre because, for one thing, what's happening is you're knowing the fate of the unobserved particle in an entangled pair, which is a quantum event, but you never observe the second particle directly.
Right. We just got to know the second particle because we found out what the first one is all about.
Exactly right. So you knew the overall system, you observed one particle and in the pair, and you collapse this wave function. But you've somehow now collapsed the other wave function without observing. And this is a major problem. So what happens is, in quantum mechanics, these particles had to somehow, these entangled particles had to somehow communicate with one another. The other particle had to know how to react once it's observed. And it had to make this decision instantaneously prior to when it was observed. Fine.
Wow.
Are you getting it?
This is a good time to remind everybody that everybody in the East Coast.
I won't be on again for 3 years.
No. I want to tell everybody to turn their clocks back. It's weekend. If you're in the Eastern Time Zone, is everybody doing this across the country or across the world or whatever? Because we want to make sure that the next time Cthulhu Chronicles is aired, you turn it on the right time.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Right here. I just wanted to give a Cthulhu Chronicles thing in there.
Absolutely.
So, go ahead.
Yeah, so this is very interesting. This idea of entanglement means you know the state of the system. And by observing one electron, in fact, you know the state of an entangled pair. And by observing one particle in the pair, you collapse two wave functions. But the second wave function has collapsed without observation. Okay, so why is this a problem? Let me explain why this is a problem.
That's because one is the loneliest number. Go ahead. All right, so why is that a problem, that the one? Go ahead.
Well, it's a problem because another feature of quantum entanglement is that once two particles become entangled, they remain entangled forever.
Forever?
Yeah. Wow. For the rest of their coexistence. Even if they travel to opposite ends of the universe.
They can't go to the Vatican and get pay for a divorce.
An annulment.
Annulment, that's the word I was looking for.
It's a Romeo and Julio particle.
Romeo and Julio? What is that? The gay marriage Shakespeare?
Julio.
Romeo and Julio. I like that. That's going to be a smash.
Oh, yeah.
These
days it could be good. Yeah.
Okay.
So. Absolutely. So, and this is not guesswork, this business about particles remaining entangled forever, even no matter how far apart they are. This is a mathematical reality. And the reason it creates a problem is because, well, let's suppose, for example, these two entangled particles travel, say, a distance of one light year apart.
Mm-hmm.
Now, thanks to Einstein, information cannot travel faster than the speed of light.
Okay.
What this means is that once you observe one particle, say, oh, look, it has a clockwise spin, now automatically, instantaneously, the other particle assumes the counterclockwise spin without being observed. So this transfer of information is immediate, but because light cannot because nothing can travel faster than the speed of light, nothing that holds information. It means the communication between the two particles should take a year. In other words, the second particle should have to wait a full year before it says, oh, got you, first particle, now I know how to spin when I'm observed.
Okay.
So this is really, that's where the problem is. And this does not occur in reality, but by mathematics and by experiment, this communication is instantaneous.
So that's obviously instantaneous. Is if they were a million miles away, that's faster than the speed. You can't even use the word faster. I mean, it's like
you can't use the word faster.
Mm-hmm,
you
can use
the word shortcut. See now.
So this is how the wormhole thing.
Yes, we're getting there.
Mm. Okay.
What happens? There actually is a string theory. There's a string theoretic explanation of this. That when you have entangled particles, they're actually connected by a string. Now, a single string, I mean, that has the smallest length measurable in the universe. There's no such thing, one Planck length. There's no such thing as cutting that string in half. It can't be done. Okay, mm-hmm. So these particles are really close, even though they travel far apart. What's happened is there must be some type of intergalactic shortcut. Maybe in some higher dimension, unseen by us. Light cannot even travel there, actually.
Hmm.
Because this communication, if light could travel there, this communication would actually be faster than light. But it's not. Okay, so then this is, by the way, there's this big, a lot of people feel that these shortcuts that are supposed to be caused by entangled pairs that have traveled over time very far apart. They're thinking that this is faster than light travel. And that's a total misnomer. Because never, en route along this shortcut, mathematically speaking, do you ever exceed the speed of light. But you get to the point faster than light would. Because you're taking the shortcut and light isn't.
Okay. So that's how I guess the concept of the wormholes started.
Yes, indeed. Exactly right. This is where people started to think about wormholes and travel. So now, to make things even more interesting, at the time of the Big Bang, all particles were entangled. I think I discussed this on a previous show, that at the time of the Big Bang, mm-hmm. the entire universe was a size of a fraction of a single photon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but there were two particles.
There were billions of particles.
There were billions of particles, but they weren't entangled.
They were all entangled.
They were all.
Oh. All of them are entangled.
Did I just lose track of everything? No,
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Okay.
At the time of the Big Bang, you've got all these particles together that are entangled. In fact, they're created at the same time. So they're all entangled.
Oh, okay. All right.
Now, according to quantum mechanics, they remain entangled to this day, which means that these shortcuts are everywhere.
Wow.
We can't see them. Can't tell where they are or how we just don't know. But you see, I guess what I'm trying to say is this. This is a bold statement, but this is a statement that is totally scientifically accepted. Quantum entanglement crushes our preconceived notion of space. In much the same way that time reversal symmetry, for example, challenges our preconceived notion of time.
Mm.
So when you talk about such conventionally accepted concepts as distance and space, these could all be illusions. These could be, our minds could be playing tricks on us.
Wow.
I know. It's exciting and frightening.
Well, it is actually.
Give us the frightening part of it again.
spooky and sad.
This is the subjective thing?
Okay, well, everything, yeah, I guess it's difficult to talk about objective and subjective.
I want to know the frightening part of that.
No one has the same
perception.
We should have our own subjective reality, but right. There really is no objective reality either.
Right.
I mean, for example, we all have different time clocks.
Right.
Okay, there's, you know, so what happens is, if we're about to understand quantum mechanics as best we can, we have to accept such notions as quantum superposition, quantum entanglement, collapsing wave functions, and it leads us, inextricably, it leads us to this notion that somehow everything is still connected, even though it seems to be far apart. They're all connected by these unfathomable intergalactic shortcuts, all these different pathways that we just don't understand them. But the real question is, can we somehow realize this micro phenomenon at the macro scale? Just like Erwin Schrödinger did when he said, let's not give the cat a plate of poison, let's give the cat a decaying radioactive atom.
Did he say that?
No.
What? What were they out of poison? Hey, we got plenty of these atoms, though. Hey, we got plenty of these packages of neutronic atoms or whatever, but we don't have that.
That's what started the Adams family.
I'd hate to be a lawyer in this, right? Because you could just see the lawyer writing down, just okay, the particle of the first part and the particle of the second part. Okay. There could be this connection of everything.
Well, some sense there has to be. Okay. I mean, the mathematics is saying it too, though. That's the thing that's so strange about it. It's not just people who are philosophizing about quantum mechanics. It's the actual mathematics that's saying, yes, these communication channels must be instantaneous, and these entangled particles must remain connected if you look at string theory. Where in the world are these strings? I mean, right now, the view of string theory is that the universe is 11-dimensional. In fact, that's M theory, really. It's an extension of 10-dimensional string theory space, the sitter space. Okay, so what's happening is you have all these extra dimensions. A whole lot of crap can go on in extra dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't really understand them. I mean, I've heard that people have said that all but space-time, all the other dimensions are compactified. It's a mathematical, topological term. They're compactified, which basically means no one can travel along them or into them, or they're very small, they collapsed. But you know, no, that's only a perception, because we can only see, if it were necessary for us to see in, say, five dimensions in order to survive, we would have developed the ability.
Mm.
It would have evolved.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm lost after the fourth dimension. Fourth dimension is time, right? So you got length, width, depth, time. Then after that, I don't even know.
But the time is very weird because
I think it was the fat guy.
The extension, when you're extending from length, width, and height to time, it's very different than extending from length and width to length, width, and height. Okay? Okay. Time is not the same kind of dimension as spatial dimensions. Mm-hmm. It actually has what's called a negative eigenvalue, negative one eigenvalue. All right, I don't want to get into this all has to do with Einstein's tensors. And that's a little too mathematical for this discussion.
Absolutely.
All right. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the answer is yes. According to the mathematics of general relativity, we can actually realize a macro scale, wormhole. I mean, here's what's going on. In order to time travel, there's still problems with this because in order to time travel, one has to traverse what's called a closed time-like loop. Okay, so think of a loop. Think of like a ring that you put in your finger. That's a loop.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So spatially, we have that.
Right.
But it's very strange to say time is moving on a loop because what happens is it means it's forward, 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 forward. Oh, look, it came back to the past.
Yeah, that is strange to say that.
Yeah.
and to comprehend that as well.
But it is a fact, if you look at the mathematics of general relativity, there's nothing, I cannot stress this enough to you tonight. There is nothing, absolutely nothing, in the mathematics of general relativity and in the mathematics of quantum mechanics that prohibits the possibility of time travel.
Really? There is nothing?
Nothing in the mathematics. Now, there are other principles and other problems, but we'll get to those in a moment. For example, what I want to do is describe to you, so you have to go through this closed time loop, and by the mathematics of general relativity, such loops can exist. However, according to the equations, the amount of energy and mass that would be required to bend space in such a way that you could create a time loop would be so great that it would require what's called negative energy. And mathematics of general relativity and quantum mechanics both allow for this. Okay, classical mechanics doesn't. In classical mechanics, you can have zero energy or positive. You can never have negative energy. But that's not true in quantum mechanics and general relativity. They both allow for the possibility of negative energy and negative pressure and negative mass. So one speculated analog is the following. Where the two entangled particles are now corresponding to gravitational singularities of two black holes. The string connecting them, the string that somehow stretches but never stretches, it just goes to a different dimension, that's called a wormhole. The string becomes traversable. It's a tube now.
Before I came on the air here, I was looking at diagrams mm-hmm. of wormholes. And they look like kind of funnels, like two funnels put together in the middle is a tube.
Yeah.
So are you saying that tube would be equivalent to the string in the string theory? Is that?
It would be an enlarged version of that. You see, what you'd have to do, these wormholes, they don't show it in the picture, but these wormholes they're talking about, they're barely big enough to send a photon through.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the first thing, if you're going to do time travel, you have to solve a lot of problems. The first thing you have to do is you have to somehow enlarge the wormhole. It's diameter. The second thing you have to do is make sure it doesn't collapse on itself. That's what takes negative pressure.
Oh, wow.
You don't have negative pressure. Yeah.
Just to get back to Lewis Carroll,
mm-hmm.
who was a mathematician. He starts off his story with Alice getting going down in the hall, but then getting larger and smaller. And so, is he symbolically talking about this kind of stuff? You think maybe, or
I don't think so. I think he had the idea. He was playing more with philosophical realities, but I think he probably did have the idea that weird stuff can happen, that there are these actual holes around. But it's not clear. Not everyone thinks that traveling through a wormhole has to take you to a different time. Some people believe it takes you to a different space without a change in time. Some people believe it takes you to a different universe. It's the multiverse theory.
Oh, yeah.
It's called the many worlds theory.
Oh, the multiverse. You know how people communicate in two different universes? The parallelogram.
I love you for that.
It's Cthulhu Chronicles, Tom Savino and Dr. Waldar having an extremely intelligent conversation. And I'll tell you what's scary. I'll tell you what's really scary is my trying to comprehend this moments ago, while trying to comprehend this, I couldn't tell left from right. That's frightening.
Well, actually, that's how I felt on the first show with Dr. Waldar.
But like, I'm going to ask something here. So that everybody, you know, I'm never afraid to ask a stupid question. In fact, they're all stupid questions. But when we talk about time travel as a, this is of course a theory, as all of this is a theory, we're talking about if we leave this dimension, we're talking about there being more than one of all of us, because.
Not necessarily.
Well, when you time travel, I mean, on these layers of time, if I go back so then theoretically, all this stuff they do with time travel and, you know, the Quantum Leap show and H.G. Wells stuff. So all of this is just, I mean, it's theory, obviously, but that's not what we're talking about. What are we talking about?
No, we're talking about that.
Yeah, we are talking about that. Okay.
But about layers, I'm not sure. See, what happens, you have all these paradoxes, right? And these paradoxes are going to have to be somehow refuted. One paradox, suppose you go back in time and kill your grandfather. Mm-hmm. Then you no longer exist. But then you couldn't go back in time and kill your grandfather, so then you do exist.
Ah. Or things change as
it's
in...
kind of like It's a Wonderful Life story and something. If my life didn't exist.
Yeah, I mean, it's really weird. So you do have paradoxes to you have to really dig deep. I mean, you have pragmatic problems, as I said, about keeping the holes open and not collapsing, which would take, it would take the amount of energy. I mean, we can't, it'd be the amount of energy of, say, exploding a star. And if you, you also have the philosophical problems, like I just said, this retrocausality problem.
That's right. That's what Tom and I did a show years back where, remember, Tom, when we went back in time, And they sneezed, and the sneeze caused something. And then when we were going back to our own time, we started to disappear because we didn't exist, because we had altered the entire reality.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Okay. And that's one of the paradoxes.
Okay, fine.
If you didn't exist, how'd you go back? So a lot of that last paradox, a lot of scientists actually, not just fiction story writers, tried to explain that you go into a different universe where there's another you. But, that doesn't seem to break the paradox as far as I'm concerned. The paradox, I think, is still there. So you have, but you see, I'm not trying to advocate, I'm not trying to sell time travel as a likely thing. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to tell you that the mathematics of general relativity and quantum mechanics allow it. There's nothing in that mathematics that will prohibit it.
Okay.
So that's pretty interesting. And in fact, here's a sketch of how you could accomplish it theoretically, at least. So, first of all, there are a couple of ways, different ways, because there are two types of time dilation. We talked about relativistic time dilation. Remember, Frank, if you get into a spaceship and you travel close to the speed of light.
Right.
And you return, it turns out that it caused time dilation in your travel. You aged less. Your clock slowed down.
That I remember, yeah.
There's another kind of time dilation called gravitational time dilation. And what this means is, and this has actually been observed on the Earth. Of course, they had to work with fractions of nanoseconds, but it was observed on the Earth that the closer you are to high gravitational force, the slower time goes.
Hmm.
So in other words, what they did, they had an atomic clock that was at the lowest part of the Earth, maybe even they dug down deeper, and they had an atomic clock in the highest peak of the Earth, and they noticed a change in the time. And Einstein predicted this. This is actually also part of general relativity.
So that's an actuality.
That's
even in... Even in my world of knowledge, that's, wow.
Well, Well, actually, I talked with Frank a few times, and particularly when Skylar was on with us. And we talked about the fact that not only is time dilation a reality, but it's accounted for when they program your GPS. Without it, you wouldn't have the right locations.
Wow.
So it's not only real, mm-hmm. it's very real.
It's, yeah, I mean, they're, it's a functional, pragmatic, it's included in how we do things.
Exactly right.
Wow. That's pretty mind-boggling. Mm.
Well, I'm going to create now, I'm going to show you how you go back in time theoretically using relativistic time dilation. Let's get ourselves two black holes, okay, and they're entangled. So you can think of them as singularities. Black holes are really basically singularities. They're not really, but they're gravitational singularities. And so what happens is you have this tube through them. Now, they're entangled. Now, what you're going to do is you're going to accelerate the black hole. Let's call them black hole A and black hole B. You're going to accelerate black hole B to a very high velocity relative to black hole A. Everything's relative. All right? So black hole B is traveling at 99% speed of light.
Okay.
And this causes time dilation to occur, this accelerated black hole. To an outside observer, the black hole B has aged more slowly than black hole A. And now you're going to return black hole B to its initial position.
Hmm.
Okay. Now the important part is you're now going to be a wormhole traveler. So you're going to enter black hole A. You want to come out black hole B. Now initially, the time clock, because you're entering a black hole A, the time clock of your time clock, the wormhole traveler, is synchronized to the time clock of black hole A.
Right.
Now, you as the traveler have not experienced this acceleration of black hole B at all. Therefore, you have not been subjected to any of its time dilation, relativistic time dilation, that is caused by this acceleration. So what this means is as you work your way through the wormhole, your clock is constantly running in synchronization with time clock of black hole A, right up to the moment you're about to come out.
Hmm, okay.
The moment you step out, you're in the past. As a matter of fact, this is the best part. Literally, you will exit the wormhole before you entered it.
Whoa.
Yeah. Many years prior. Depending how long you accelerated.
That happened to me once in the World's Fair.
It's trippy.
Me too. Wow.
You're still here. It's a Cthulhu Chronicles. Let me take just a little break here. Tom Savino and Dr. Andrew Wohl are here. And I think a lot of people who might have seen the movie Contact, the film version of Carl Sagan's novel, there's a point where Jodie Foster goes into a wormhole. But nobody sees the spaceship go anywhere. It just goes in time, of course, to her it's a long time, to them it's not, and vice versa. But that's the concept, right, of the worm? Because she just says it in the movie like, I'm going through a wormhole, and like everybody's supposed to know. It's a wormhole. You know, it's like, oh, great, the whole audience is sitting there going, it's a wormhole. But that idea that's the same thing, right? She went to another dimension in a way, right?
It depends. I mean, she traveled through another dimension, very possible. But the fact is, she wound up in the same dimensions. But she wound up sooner moment in time.
Well, you know, there was in 2012 there was another movie that called Looper. Have you heard of that movie?
Oh, the one about the people who go back to kill the people who are bad or something, or they go
right. In fact, one guy goes back to kill himself. Or prevent, he goes back to kill himself. It's like, it's trippy. But it's about time travel, yeah.
But he wanted to go back and kill himself before he
killed someone else in the future.
Before he performs some egregious act.
Yes, exactly.
He had already done, right?
Yeah, it's Bruce Willis and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Well, and it's really interesting.
If he hadn't already done it, he could just kill himself in the present.
I guess, you know, I'm not doing it justice. They had, it seemed more logical.
No, he probably killed a bunch of people in the past, and he, to atone for his sins, he wanted to go back to a time prior to when he killed the first person and killed himself then.
Yeah, suspension of belief takes a big, we have to take. And there's always a machine or something, some way that they have figured out to do this. In these in films, always a different way because they just have to make it up, right? They can't even go into the stuff you're going into,
right? Well, no, they probably have the science consultant.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. I don't know. Well, we know Sagan obviously knew a lot about this, so
it came right from contact came from his book. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Listen, Skylar Hall has a question, which he just and this is this fits right into it here. Could you theoretically exit the wormhole before the wormhole even existed?
That's a wonderful question. I'm going to say no, because you entered it. Wait a second.
But are you saying no now because we're observing you? That's the question.
Very good.
And is this considered observation? Just listening to what you have to say.
Very good. Boy, you guys are doing great.
I'm telling you. You think you don't rub off on us, but you do.
You put away your spitballs and got down to
things. Oh, we started to think it through here.
No, and well, Skylar's question is that's puzzling. I have to give that some more time. Okay. I guess you could.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, and there are so many different paradoxes that arise. Here's an example of a problem, for example, a physical problem.
Mm-hmm.
In order to step out of a wormhole, remember that the mouth of a wormhole is a black hole.
Right.
So you're really gonna be in this black hole. How do you actually exit from the black hole? Because nothing
stayed left.
Not even like an escape from it, right? Well, it's not right. It's not right. So according to Stephen Hawking, matter and just possibly the information that is carried by that matter can escape from a black hole.
Matter can escape from the black hole.
Absolutely.
Well, how can matter escape? Well, doesn't it spit out? Doesn't the black hole on the other side of a black hole, doesn't it spit things out? Don't you just go through it? I mean, nobody stays and resides there, right?
No one really. Theoretically, this was a discussion of wormholes. That is what happens.
Yeah.
But
okay.
You see, when it says, when it spits you out, it's, you know, do you really come, what does it mean to come out?
Right.
You come out of the wormhole, now you're in the black hole.
Okay.
But the whole idea of Hawking radiation, I can explain that too. Hawking radiation, basically, because for a long time people believed that nothing could escape from a black hole, including any form of information. And that's very important to be able to talk about time travel. What happens is that information has to leak out of a black hole. And it does. Hawking radiation is a rather new concept. Basically, what happens is you have an antiparticle, a particle and this is about matter and antimatter. So you have an antiparticle is a particle of antimatter. And what happens is all the time at constant and incredible speeds, incredibly small time intervals, you have particles and antiparticles popping in and out of existence. Okay, so rapid you can't even imagine. Now they pop into existence and almost instantaneously they're out of existence because they meet. When a particle and antiparticle meet, they annihilate each other.
Hmm.
But the theory is that up near the event horizon of a black hole, it is possible to have a lot of these particle-antiparticle pairs come into existence, and before they can even annihilate each other, one of those particles falls into the black hole and the other one doesn't.
Hmm.
And the one that doesn't, that's called Hawking radiation.
Hmm. Interesting.
Right. So what's going on is you really do you know, and this took care of a lot of paradoxes and a lot of problems with the idea that nothing could escape from a black hole, because it destroyed some concepts about known and very conventionally held theories, you know, principles such as entropy and such as conservation of matter and various kinds of things like that. Okay, this is now well explained. So the idea is that information can escape from a black hole. But here is the problem that physicists are even today concerned about. The question is the information that comes out of a black hole, is it ordered or is it scrambled?
Hmm.
Because if it's ordered, then time travel could become an actual reality. Because what's happening is you're sending information to the past.
Yeah, but what's the past? Is it another plane? It's another dimension. It's another plane. It's another...
Well, it depends on your point of view. I would never call it another dimension. I would call it, because it's a shift on the time axis. So it's all still in space-time.
Okay.
So I wouldn't say it's another dimension. But I would say that to get from one point in space-time to another point in space-time, it is true that you may have to enter another dimension, but you still come back.
Mm.
The
wow.
If this information, by the way, if it's scrambled, then we're back to square one. So, and this is what they're thinking.
Really, is square one like way back to the plate and the slits?
Yeah, what's square one?
Not that far back, but we're back to square one as far as trying to make a case that time travel could ever become an actual reality.
Now, in essence, this all remains, theoretical and stuff, right? But in essence...
It remains theoretical, Frank, but the mathematics does not prohibit it, which is amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing, because if the mathematics don't prohibit it, if the mathematics allow it, then we got to assume that either the whole history of mathematics is off some way, or... there is a way to do this.
Yeah, there are a lot of theories that say, well, we don't quite understand what we're talking about also. So, I mean, the mathematics may be fine, but we may not be implementing it correctly or interpreting it correctly. For example, there are many paradoxes that are involved in quantum mechanics. You know, there are hidden variables, particular hidden variables. Quantum gravity is an attempt to reconcile quantum mechanics and general relativity, because they don't exactly make sense together. Okay, the notion of quantum gravity, if someone could actually nail that down, then they would. There's a lot we don't understand about string theory. You know, the theory tells you stuff, but if you can't run experiments that often, you can't prove or disprove it. That becomes very hard.
Mm.
So what happens is you start to develop, whenever you run into a paradox, you come up with some kind of explanation. And that, for the time being, is a theory. But it could be we're looking at this whole thing from the wrong perspective.
Okay,
we're looking at it the right way, but from the wrong perspective. Mathematics is tight. Even if all of this is a bunch of hogwash, the mathematics is still correct. But the mathematics assumes certain axioms. So the mathematics will always be correct. But the physics is not based on those axioms. Physics is based on reality.
And reality
is... You try and model reality by creating mathematical axioms.
Mm.
So the mathematics will always be correct from day one to day infinity. But the point is, maybe the model is off.
Okay, we have about 9 minutes. How can we put all this together in 9 minutes so that anybody listening sat back and went, aha, well, I know a little bit more about almost everything. Now, I mean, can we do that, or does this have, we have to do another show and go back to the wormhole? What eats worms? I don't know.
Well, let's see.
What eats wormholes?
I think it's all summed up. I mean, the first thing that's very important to grasp is the fact that quantum mechanics is very, very strange and weird. It is the action to distance.
And quantum mechanics is the same thing as quantum physics? Or we just, is that just a...
Yes.
Okay, the same thing. Okay.
So in quantum mechanics, we first came across this notion of a quantum wave, which is really just a probability distribution, and collapsing the wave, which means observing. So in other words, we have to grasp the fact that the observer affects the outcome of an experiment. In fact, you have quantum computers. Just a few days, I'm going to talk with about quantum computing with my former student, Jean-Marc Jantz, who's very, very bright. He's going for his PhD right now in physical chemistry, and he wants to know more about quantum computing. So we're going to do some Skyping over that. But the thing about quantum computing is also very, very interesting, you see, because you can solve certain types of problems with quantum computers that you can never solve with classical computers. That quantum computer is also involved collapsing the wave function, except in a very, very funny way. If you're doing a calculation with quantum computers, you cannot look at the calculation in progress. Because if you do, you will affect the outcome.
And you want to know the outcome without being about it being observed.
That's right. The moment you observe a calculation in progress, you collapse the wave function. And now these quantum bits that are doing qubits, which are doing so well to solve the problem, fall into classical states, bits. And now from then on, it's not going to work the same way. So you have to wait until the problem is completely finished and then observe.
I know, that's
really trippy.
Isn't it?
That is trippy, I know.
You want to hear, is it something else that maybe, I think what I'm going to try to do, I got to get an idea for an experiment. What if I take the cat, remember the cat in the box thing, the Schrodinger, is that his name?
Yes, I'm not sure where this is going, but yeah.
Schrodinger's cat? Okay. Yeah, what if we don't put poison? Instead of poison, we put curiosity.
Beautiful.
In the box.
And I think we've done that tonight.
It's a philosophical thing. Yeah. What if we put I mean, can we prove that curiosity did not kill the cat, right? By that way?
I think tonight we did put curiosity in the box.
See?
Absolutely.
We sealed all the viewers in the box with it.
If anyone wanted to read a book, an introduction to quantum mechanics, what would you suggest?
It gets very mathematical very fast.
There is no simple book.
I have some links.
There's no simple thing at all.
I have some links. Let me give you them over the air. This first link really handles three things well, in a fun way, almost like reading a comic book. It handles the double split experiment, which I mentioned tonight. Why do I say split? I have split. It's double slit experiment. The quantum entanglement that I discussed tonight, right. And also Flatland.
Okay, give us the links before we run out of time.
All right, so I shorten the link. So it's goo, G-O-O,
right.
Dot, G-L,
right.
Slash, W-R-5-0-A-8.
A-8.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a capital? No, small A and...
Doesn't matter.
Oh, it doesn't matter. What about that dash? Is that a dash or a...
No, it's a slash.
Backslash, front, what is it?
No, slash. Slash.
Oh,
G-O-O dot G-L slash W-R.
Yeah. Let me give it again.
Okay.
G-O-O dot G-L slash W-R-5-0-A-8.
Zero. A-8. Okay.
And now let me give you another one in quantum computers. We didn't really hit on that tonight, but I did mention it. G-O-O dot G-L slash V-D, and gosh darn it, I can't tell if these are ones or L's. Let's say L-4-L-A. And if that doesn't work, try 1-4-1-A.
V-D.
Then it's then either 1-4-1-A or L-4-L-A.
Okay.
Or maybe L41A or these stupid L's and 1's. They look alike.
Why we do it in that's why I learned to do it when I was in overseas. That you do that. Looks like a 7 unless you put the.
Yes, exactly.
That's why they do that. That's a good way to do that. And this is this .com or net or what?
That's all you need. I shorten these.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. These are the short. Okay. And that's for anyone can go over there to get that quantum.
Anyone within the sound of your voice can pick these up by following, of course, up to the discrepancy I have on that last one. But if you really want, you'll find it. Let me see if I can tell you. Let me click on it, actually, just so I can give you more.
Here's a quick click. Quick click here.
Click on the second one, quantum computers. And the document is trying to connect.
Well, he's trying to connect there. Dr. Andrew Woldar is available. You have a website or something. Don't you have a place people can write to you, too?
Use the word in reference to laws of physics that apply. Let me kill the sound and stop
that. Who's that? Another guest? It's a little too late for another guest. Who is that?
So here is I can tell you what it is without the shortening. It's youtube.com
right.
/ watch, WATCH,
right.
*V.
Question mark V?
Yes. He's a Victor. Equal sign.
Yeah.
T2DXRS0OPHU. And there's all kind of capitals and lowercase, so I have no idea if it, you know.
Okay.
I didn't explain that, but you can search it. The name of it, if you search YouTube, is Quantum Computers Animated.
Okay.
It's a very good job. A very good job.
You guys are great, and I'm sure everyone is going to be. They probably filled up their Cthulhu Chronicles notebooks tonight, and they'll be going, searching all over the place and on. For this stuff, and you know we'll be Doc. You'll be back again. I know you will.
Yeah, I will sometime. Surely
you will be back again. He's very busy there at Villa Vista, Villanova, Nova. Oh my God! And Tom Savino, of course, who will be going. His show will be coming up soon. In the meantime, Tom and I will be touring as the title roles in the new play Romeo and Julio, which will be will make watch for us. Watch us in your town or a town near you for that. And all I can do is say thanks again, fellows.
You're welcome. Enjoyed it again. Thank you, Doctor and Frank.
Oh, yeah, it's been my pleasure. Great to be on with you guys.
Always great to be on with you. The things I learned take a long time, but for God's sakes, some of it gets through, as you noticed, because I actually was able to keep up with even Tom, who's
more clever than you let on.
Well, I don't know about that. But anyway, as the case may be, it is time to move on here. So, hey guys, I don't know what to say. Thank you, and we'll be back. We'll see you again, hear you again shortly.
Ready?
Okay.
Yep.
Bye.
I guess that was good nights. And good nights to them. There they go. Okay, Dr. Andrew Woldar, Thomas Savino, of course. We'll finish that thing there as we move on. I think I will be do not go darkly into the, no, do not go silently into the dark night, into the wormhole. My name is Frank Cotolo. Man, his name joins the title of the show. Go to Frank Cotolo, Facebook Frank Cotolo, and you get us there. Go to at Frank Cotolo. Twitter, join us over there. Tom Savino, I know I didn't get Dr. Woldar, it says at TJ Savino. Twitter, he's not on Facebook. And Dr. Woldar, just look him up, Dr. Andrew Woldar, W-O-L-D-A-R, and you'll find some way to get in touch with him. Make your questions short, please, if you possibly can. The man has a lot to do. Good night, Mrs. Ernstwhile, wherever you may be located this evening. Everybody, don't forget to go buy a license and skill at Amazon and anything else that I have for sale. And we'll be telling you more about it. I don't know what's going to happen next week. We begin November, and we'll see what goes on. But there's things going on. Heather Drain is going to be here in November, and a couple of other people who you know and love, and even new people. So stay with us then. I will leave it right now because I have nothing more to say.